This audio program is brought to you courtesy of Audible.com. Audible, audio that speaks to you wherever you are.
We present June Whitfield as Miss Marple in Agatha Christie's A Murder is Announced.
Always find the personal column of a local paper completely irresistible. The frenzied appeals for domestic help, gentlemen who are looking for adventurous commissions abroad, anything considered. And so it was with great interest that while reading through the chipping Cleghorn Gazette, I noticed among the cocker spaniels for sale and the reconditioned motor mowers and the ancient Daimlers the following notice. A murder is announced, and will take place on Friday, October the 29th, at Little Paddock's at 6:30 p.m. Friends, please accept this, the only intimation.
Murder game. That's it. Bound to be.
A murder game?
Yeah, it can be quite good fun. You draw lots. One person's the murderer. Well, nobody knows who, is it? And then lights out. Murderer chooses his victim, who has to count to 20 before he or she screams. And then the person who's chosen to be the detective takes charge. Questions everybody about where they were, what they were doing, tries to catch them out. It's a great game if the chap who's playing the detective knows a bit about the way of police work.
Well, like you, Archie. All those cases you used to hear when you were in Simla.
Yes. I dare say I could give them a hint or two.
Miss Blacklock ought to have asked your advice in setting the thing up.
Yeah. Well, she's got that young nephew of hers staying with her.
Patrick Simmons.
Yeah. I expect it was his idea, you know. Funny way to do it, isn't it? Advertising it in the paper. Rather vulgar, don't you think? Well, they can rule me out.
Oh, Archie, I do think you really ought to go, just to help poor Miss Blacklock out. The whole thing would just fall flat if you don't go along and make it a success.
Well, if you put it like that, Laura...
I really do think that it's your duty, Archie. Hitch! Where are you?
Hen house, Murgatroyd.
Just take a look at this, Hitch. In the Gazette.
Daft, if you ask me, Murgatroyd.
Well, yes, but what do you think it means?
A drink. That's what it means.
Oh, you think it's some sort of invitation?
We'll find out when we get there. Best we can hope for is a glass of bad sherry, I expect. You'd better get off the grass, Murgatroyd. You've still got your bedroom slippers on. They'll be soaked through.
Oh, dear. So they are. How many eggs today?
7. That damn hen's still broody. I must get her into the coop. Why we keep ducks like Miss Blacklock? Far more reliable.
A murder is announced. It's a funny way to put it, don't you think?
Probably all cooked up by Patrick and Julia. Where's that damned hen got to? Come here, you brute!
A murder? When?
This evening, 6:30. At Little Paddock's. Oh, but you won't be able to go, darling. You've got all those brats to prepare for confirmation. Oh, it is a shame. And you do so love murders.
I haven't got the faintest idea what you're talking about, Bunch. And I do wish you wouldn't call them brats.
Well, that's what they are. But you'd better read it for yourself. There, among the second-hand pianos and the old teeth.
What an extraordinary announcement. Not like Miss Blacklock at all. And it can hardly be that woman who lives with her...
Dora Bunner? Mm. She's far too muddle-headed to plan a lunch, let alone a murder. No, it can't be her idea. It's probably Patrick and Julia Simmons. Anyway, I'll go and I'll tell you all about it. The game will be wasted on me, though, because I really don't like nasty surprises happening in the dark. I hope I shan't have to be the one who's murdered. I wouldn't care for that at all.
You're such a frightened little child, aren't you, Bunch?
I know I'm stupid.
You're not stupid at all, darling.
Well, I'm not an intellectual like you. But I do like it when you talk to me about books and history and things. T- tell me that story again about the old vicar who preached about Ahasuerus.
Oh, but you know that by heart.
Oh, just tell it again, please.
Oh, very well. It was old Scrimgeour when he was at St. Osmond's. He was leaning out of the pulpit and preaching fervently to a couple of old charwomen. He was shaking his fists at them and saying, "Aha, I know what you're thinking. You think that the great Ahasuerus in the first lesson was Artaxerxes the second. But he wasn't." And then, with enormous triumph, he was Artaxerxes the third.
I do love that story. I think you'll be exactly like that someday, Julian. Artaxerxes the third.
By the middle of the morning, everybody in Chipping Cleghorn had read the advertisement and decided that they simply must call in at 6:30 to find out what it was all about. But no one was more mystified than the inhabitants of Little Paddocks themselves.
"But whatever can it mean, Letty? A murder is announced, and it says Little Paddocks quite distinctly."
"Patrick, is this one of your silly jokes?"
"Of course it isn't, Aunt Letty. What on earth gave you that idea?"
"I wouldn't put it past you. Was it Julia, then?"
"I wouldn't have thought so. She doesn't go in for jokes much."
"You don't think that possibly Mrs. Hayes..."
"Philippa? I don't think she tried to be funny either. She's a serious girl, is our Philippa."
"But why? What's the point of it, Letty? I don't like it at all."
Now, Dora, don't get yourself all worked up about it. It's just somebody's nasty, twisted sense of humour, that's all. But I wish I knew whose."
"If it is a joke, it's a very spiteful one. It frightens me. And it's frightened you, Letty."
No, nonsense. It's just some silly idiot trying to be funny."
"But it says today. Today at 6:30 p.m. What do you think's going to happen?"
"I can tell you what'll happen, Dora. We'll have half the village up here simply agog with curiosity. I'd better make sure we have some sherry in the house."
"I'll take a look, Aunt Letty." "Oh, Lord.
Miss Blacklock, I have to speak with you."
"Yes, Mitzi, what is it?"
"I am come to give you my notices. I go at once."
"But why, Mitzi? What's the matter? Someone upset you?"
"I do not wish to die. I come to England because I think I would be safe here. And now they are coming to kill me."
"What on earth are you talking about, Mitzi?"
"It is in the newspaper. See here. It says a murder here at 6:30. I do not wait to be murdered."
"But it doesn't apply to you, Mitzi. We all think it's a joke."
"A joke? It is not a joke to murder someone."
No, of course not. "But, my dear child, if anyone wanted to murder you, they would hardly advertise the fact in the paper, would they?"
"You do not think they would? Then who is it that they plan to murder? Perhaps it is you, Miss Blacklock."
"I really cannot believe anyone wants to murder me, and I am certain no one intends to murder you. Now, perhaps you could start to make some cheese straws from that hard bit of cheese we've got left. I think that people will probably be turning up here this evening for drinks."
"This evening? But who should come here?"
"Almost everyone who's read the announcement."
"I've had a look in the pantry, Aunt Letty. There's only about half a bottle of sherry left."
I should think that ought to do. No. Not if Miss Hinchcliffe and Miss Murgatroyd take it into their heads to drop in. Now, Julia said she was going down to the shop. Ask her if she'd mind getting another bottle of sherry. There's nothing like being prepared for the worst."
"Right, we've got olives and cheese straws and Mitzi's delicious little pastries."
"Do stop eating them, Patrick. There won't be any left." "Now, what I think we ought to do is to move the table round the corner into the bay window. Now, would you give me a hand?"
"Of course, Aunt Letty. Here we go."
"After all, I'm not really giving a party. I haven't invited anybody, and I don't intend to make it obvious that I expect people to turn up. There. Yes, that should be sufficiently inconspicuous."
"You wish to disguise your intelligent anticipation."
"Very nicely put, Patrick."
"And I shall do my best to look sufficiently surprised when people just happen to drop in."
"Letty, dear, isn't it time to shut up the ducks? It's getting dark."
"No, I'll see to it."
"Oh, no, you won't. Last time you didn't lock the door properly and two of them got out."
"Why don't I go, Letty? I'll just put my galoshes on. Now, where's my cardigan?"
"It's no good, Dora. She's gone. Aunt Letty's so efficient, she can never bear anybody else to do things for her. It's much better to let her just get on with it."
Two large bowls of late bronze chrysanthemums were set out on a corner table, and there was a small vase of violets. The new bottle of sherry was opened, the silver cigarette box was filled up, and the central heating was turned on. The inhabitants of Little Paddocks did their best to prepare for whatever fate had in store for them, while their neighbours made their way towards the house, looking forward to some kind of clever game that would enliven their rather dull lives. In the austerity of the post-war years, entertainment was in very short supply, particularly if you lived in a country village. Of course, none of the visitors who arrived on that grey October evening was willing to admit that it was the newspaper advertisement that had brought them there.
I hope you don't mind us dropping in, Miss Blacklock. Just happened to be passing this way.
I'm delighted.
Art for chrysanthemum, simply lovely.
A glass of sherry, Mrs. Easterbrook.
Oh, how nice. Thank you.
Yes, it's kind. Thank you.
Here are the ladies from Boulders.
Ah. Evening, Letty. Thought we'd drop in. I wanted to ask how your ducks are laying.
Oh, they're perfectly fine, Miss Hinchcliffe, thank you. Though sometimes I think they are rather more troubled than they were.
The evenings are drawing in, rather, aren't they?
I see you've got the central heating on already.
You haven't got a fire, though. I mean, don't you normally have a fire this time of year?
I think the chrysanthemums are simply lovely.
The vicar's lady, Mrs. Halmon.
Hello, Miss Blacklock. I'm not too late, am I?
No, of course not.
When does the matter begin? Julian is just frantic that he can't be here. He adores murders.
Do have a glass of sherry, Mrs. Halmon.
Well, if it's going to begin, it ought to begin soon. Oh. It's coming up to the half hour.
If? What do you mean, if, Miss Blacklock?
Well, I'm as much in the dark as you are. I've no idea what...
Was it? Oh, I
saw it. It's beginning.
Oh, John, the light's out. I don't like it.
Archie, where are you?
Just here, my dear. There's nothing to worry about.
Stick them up! Stick them up, I tell you!
I wish he wouldn't shine that torch about. I can't see.
What's he looking for?
Oh, Eddie!
Look, it's just a game, Laura. Nothing to worry about.
What's happening? Oh, turn the lights on, please. Can't somebody find the switch?
Were those shots real?
Archie! I want to get out of here.
Or was it a burglar, do you think?
I say, has anybody got a lighter?
Yes, here we are.
Where's the light switch?
It's over here. It must be off at the mains, or there's been a fuse.
Who's making that frightful row?
It's Mitzi. Somebody's murdering Mitzi.
No such luck.
But it sounds as if somebody has locked her in.
She must be in the dining room.
I'll see if I can let her out.
Patrick! Do you know where the fuse box is?
In the passage behind the scullery.
Right, can you find your way there?
No, I've got a light.
Oh, for goodness sake, pull yourself together, girl.
I found the dining room candles. Has anyone got a light?
Here we are. Hold them steady, Bunch.
That's a bit better. And now we can see what we're doing.
The blood! The blood! Miss Blacklock, you are shot! You bleed to death!
No, don't be stupid, Mitzi. I'm hardly hurt at all. The bullet just grazed my ear.
There's blood on your blouse.
Well, it's just a nick on my ear. It looks much worse than it is.
Oh, Letty, you're so brave.
Oh. I say, could you bring the candles over here, please? I think we should take a look at our intruder.
What's happened to him?
He's covered in blood.
Fellow must have shot himself.
Is he badly hurt, Archie?
I think he's dead. I can't find any pulse. He must have tripped himself up in this cloak affair and shot himself. It's difficult to tell without any real light.
Patrick must have found the fuse.
Well, that's a bit better. If I can get this mask off...
He's quite young.
It was just one of the fuses that had gone. Good Lord.
Letty, do you see who it is? It's the young man from the Spa Hotel in Medden and Wells.
The one who came here and asked you to give him money to get back to Switzerland.
And I wouldn't give him any.
It must have been a pretext to spy out the house. Oh, he might have killed you.
Colonel, do you think you could get Dora a little brandy? There's a decanter on the sideboard in the dining room.
Yes, of course. Right away.
And Patrick, I think we'd better ring the police at once. And could you get me a plaster from the bathroom? It's so messy, bleeding like a stuck pig.
Can't tell you how glad I am they've put you on the case, Dermot. It seems a perfectly extraordinary affair, advertising a crime before you commit it. I want to hear all about it, if I'm not intruding, that is.
Intruding, Sir Henry? It isn't every detective inspector who has a godfather who just happens to be an ex-commissioner of Scotland Yard. I shall be grateful for your advice.
Who was this fellow, anyhow?
His name was Rudy Schertz, Swiss national, employed at the Royal Spa Hotel in Medenham Wells as a receptionist.
And it was he who planted this advertisement?
Yes, as far as we know. The man who handed it in answers our description of him perfectly.
But surely the person who accepted it must have thought it a bit odd.
I would have said that the adenoid blonde I had a word with is quite incapable of any thought whatever. She just counted the words and took the money.
And what was the idea, do you think? To get all the locals together at a particular place at a particular time and relieve them of their spare cash and valuables? As an idea, it's not without originality.
Well, it's a possibility. I think there are indications that he might have been helping himself to quite large sums of money at the hotel, which he would have needed to cover before they found him out. Oh. But there are quite a few things that don't add up. One of the waitresses at the hotel, who is quite friendly with, told me he was always talking big about how rich and important his people were in Switzerland, but he never seemed to have any cash.
And what about the story of his coming out to see Miss Blacklock to ask for money? Is there anything in that, do you think?
You'll have to wait until this evening to hear about that, Sir Henry. I've arranged to call at Little Paddock's this afternoon to take in the scene of the crime.
You should have seen it last night, Inspector. Two little tables knocked over and the leg off one of them and a burn on one of the best pieces of furniture. Yes. People are so careless about these things. Luckily, none of the china got broken.
Dora, dear, all these things, vexatious though they may be, are really of no consequence. I think it would be best if we let the inspector ask his questions.
Thank you, Miss Blacklock. Now, perhaps we ought to begin with the dead man. Can you tell me when you first saw Rudy Schertz?
My first encounter with him was about 3 weeks ago. Miss Buller and I had been having lunch at the Royal Spa Hotel, and just as we were leaving, this young man came straight up to me.
Miss Blacklock, is it not? He said.
He said that perhaps I did not remember him, that he was the son of the proprietor of the Hotel des Alpes at Montreux, where my sister Charlotte and I had stayed for nearly a year during the war.
And you didn't remember him, Miss Blacklock?
No, I didn't. I had no memory ever of having seen him before. I tried to be as civil as possible and said I hoped he was enjoying himself in England, and he said that his father had sent him over for 6 months to learn the reception business. It all seemed perfectly natural.
And then?
About 10 days ago, he suddenly turned up here. He apologised for troubling me, but said I was the only person he knew in England and that he wanted money to return to Switzerland as his mother was dangerously ill.
But Nettie didn't give it to him.
It was all such nonsense. His father was a wealthy man and he could easily have wired him money. I was secretary for years to a very big financier, and one becomes very wary about appeals for money.
Yes, of course.
The only thing that did surprise me was that he gave in so easily and went away without any more argument. It was as though he had never expected to get the money.
Do you think that what he was really here for was to spy out the land?
That's exactly what I do think now. He found some excuse to look into the dining room, and when he was going, he sprang forward to open the front door.
"Please allow me, madame," he said.
I think he just wanted to look at the fastening. Actually, like most people around here, we never lock the front door until it gets dark.
And what about the side door? There is a side door, I understand.
Oh, yes. Yes, I went through it last night to shut up the ducks, not long before the people arrived.
Was it locked when you went out?
I can't remember. I certainly locked it when I came in.
So, he could have slipped in quietly while you were attending to the ducks, and since he'd already taken a good look round, he knew where he could hide himself. Yes, that seems quite clear.
I beg your pardon, but it's not clear at all. Why should anybody go to all that trouble? All there was in the house was a few pounds in my drawer and a few bits and pieces of jewellery.
It wasn't burglary at all. I told you that, Lottie. It was revenge, because you wouldn't give him that money. He shot at you twice, deliberately.
Now, let's get down to the events of last night. I'd like you to tell me exactly what happened, Miss Blacklock.
I remember saying to the vicar's wife that if anything were going to happen, it would have to be soon. And then it chimed the half hour, and the lights went out.
Was there a flash first, or a noise when that happened?
I don't think so.
I'm sure there was a flash, and a crackling noise.
And then, Miss Blacklock?
The door opened.
Which door?
Oh, the door here. The other one doesn't open.
Oh.
The door opened, and there he was, a masked man with a revolver. He said something, I forget what.
Hands up or I shoot!
Yes, something like that.
And you all put your hands up?
No, I didn't. It all seemed so utterly silly.
And what happened then?
Well, the flashlight was right in my eyes. It dazzled me. And then quite suddenly I heard a bullet whiz past me and hit the wall by my head. I felt a burning pain in my ear.
It was terrifying.
And then the figure turned away and seemed to stumble. Then there was another shot, and his torch went out, and then everybody began pushing and calling out.
Where were you standing, Miss Blacklock?
She was over by the table. She'd got a vase of violets in her hand.
I was standing just here. Actually, I think I was holding a cigarette box.
You had a very narrow escape, Miss Blacklock.
He shot at her quite deliberately. He turned the torch on everybody until he found her, and then he held it and just fired at her.
Yes.
He meant to kill you, Letty, and when he found he'd missed, he shot himself.
No.
I'm certain that's the way it was.
Tell me, Miss Blacklock, before the shots were fired, what were you expecting to happen? Did you think it was all some kind of joke?
You thought that Patrick had done it at first.
Patrick?
My young cousin Patrick Simmons. He calls me aunt, which is why everybody thinks he's my nephew, naturally enough. And I thought the advertisement might have been an attempt at humour on his part, but he denied it absolutely.
And you were worried, although you pretended not to be.
Is there anything more I can tell you, Inspector?
I think that will be all for the present. But I shall need a list from you of all the people in your household and all the visitors who were in the house at the time. I shall need to take statements from all of them in due course.
Oh, yes, of course, Inspector. I'll write it out for you now.
How kind of you to take the trouble to drop in, Dermot. Indulging an old man's curiosity.
I just thought I'd bring you up to date, Sir Henry.
I've received an offer of information from a most unlikely source. Oh. Came in the afternoon post. I think you'd better take a look at it.
I've seen this handwriting before. Like a runaway spider who's fallen into the ink bottle. Hope that I'm not trespassing on your valuable time, but I might possibly be of some slight assistance. Good Lord! Aunt Jane!
I wasn't aware that Miss Marple was your aunt, Dermot.
It's just my nickname for her, Sir Henry. She's saved me from making a fool of myself many a time.
It seems that instead of being safely tucked up in St. Mary Mead, she's at Bentham Wills and at the right time to be mixed up in a murder.
Yes.
Once more, a murder is announced for the benefit and enjoyment of Miss Marple.
And she's staying at the Royal Spa Hotel.
How did you know that?
She's written on hotel notepaper.
Oh.
It's the place where the dead man, Rudy Schatz, worked. I bet she's onto something.
I think a little trip to Bentham Wells is in order, Dermot.
Mm.
I believe they do an excellent lunch.
Of course, I could never afford to stay here myself. But Raymond, my nephew, Raymond West, you may remember him.
How could I possibly forget him?
Yes, well, apparently his latest book has been a tremendous success, and he insisted on giving me a little treat.
What exactly is it that you have to tell us, Aunt Jane?
Well, I think it might be better if we were to find somewhere a little less public.
I've taken care of that. The manager has given us a private room.
It was a cheque. He altered it.
You mean Rudy Schatz, the man who staged the hold-up?
Yes, I have it here. It came this morning with my others from the bank. There. You can see it was for £7, and he altered it to 17.
Yeah.
Really very neatly done. A certain amount of practice, I would say.
You're quite right, of course. Apparently he had a criminal record in Switzerland.
The difficulty is that it simply doesn't make sense.
How do you mean?
Well, surely. Here is a personable young man who filches a little bit here and a little bit there, alters a small cheque or takes a little bit from the till, just enough to give him the money to dress well and take a girl out, and then suddenly he goes off with a revolver and holds up a room full of people and shoots at someone. He would never have done a thing like that, not for one moment.
You think that someone may have put him up to it?
I know someone did.
But how can you be sure?
He was going out with a little red-haired waitress from the dining room.
Myrna Harris.
Oh, you've spoken to her, have you? And what did she tell you?
That he talked big. How wealthy his people were in Switzerland, but he never seemed to have any money. Nothing much more than that.
I'm afraid you don't have my experience in getting people to talk, Dermot. This morning, she brought the breakfast up to my room, and there were kippers instead of herrings, and she forgot the milk jug. I could tell she was upset, and so I asked her whether it had anything to do with the young man who'd been involved in the hold-up.
And what did she tell you?
Apparently, on the night it happened, they had been planning to go to the pictures, but he told her he would have to cancel it. The poor girl was most upset, but he told her that he was going to make a lot of money and that he would buy her a wristwatch. And then he showed her the advertisement he'd put in the Gazette.
And did he explain to her what it was all about?
He said there was going to be a party somewhere, and she was not to tell anyone, but he was going to stage a hold-up.
Did he tell her who had put him up to it?
He didn't say anything except that it was all going to be a great joke. I shall laugh to see all their faces, he said.
Poor devil. He didn't have long to laugh.
Something tells me that this is a crime that went terribly wrong. We have to find out what was actually meant to happen. And who is behind it all?
This is a list of the people who were in Little Paddocks at the time of the shooting. I've made a copy for you.
How very thoughtful of you, Dermot.
As you can see, there were six people living in the house. Miss Blacklock herself and her companion, Dora Bunner.
How long has she been her companion?
Only about 6 months, I think. They were old school friends and hadn't seen one another for years. Miss Bunner, it seems, had rather fallen on hard times and was finding it difficult to make ends meet, just on her old age pension, and her health had given way. She wrote to Miss Blacklock. It must have been a kind of cry for help. And Miss Blacklock simply swooped down and carried her off to Little Paddocks, telling her that she needed someone to help run the house. She's rather a muddle-headed, pathetic creature. Completely devoted to Miss Blacklock, as you might expect.
And Patrick and Julia Simmons are Miss Blacklock's nephew and niece, I take it?
Well, they're actually second cousins, even though they do call her Aunt Letty. They've been living there for a couple of months. As far as I can tell, they're more sort of paying guests than anything else. Patrick's studying for an engineering degree. At first, Miss Blacklock seemed to think that he'd dreamt the whole thing up as a kind of practical joke, but he strongly denies having anything to do with it at all and swears he never saw Rudy Schertz in his life.
Mm-hmm. And the other one, Julia?
She's training as a dispenser at Milchester General Hospital. Very composed she is, and seemed more annoyed than anything else when I talked to her.
It was all rather like a bad film. Really quite stupid. Just as the clock chimed 6:30, all the lights went out, and a masked figure came in and shouted, "Stick 'em up, guys," or something of that sort. And suddenly he fired 2 shots, and it wasn't quite so silly anymore.
The man had a torch, I understand.
Yes, he shone it straight at us. It was terribly dazzling.
Did he hold the torch steady, or did he move it about?
He moved it, like a spotlight in a dance hall. Mm. It was full in my eyes, and then it went slowly round the room. And suddenly there were 2 shots.
And then?
He whirled round and fell on the floor. And Mitzi began screeching like a banshee from the dining room. She was locked in, I think.
Do you think the man shot himself deliberately, or do you think he stumbled and the gun went off accidentally?
I haven't the faintest idea. The whole thing was so stagey. Actually, I thought it was still some stupid joke until somebody flicked on a lighter and I saw the blood streaming from Aunt Letty's ear. But even if you were going to fire a gun to make the hold-up look more real, you'd be careful to aim it away from somebody's head, wouldn't you?
Do you think he could see clearly who he was firing at? Was Miss Blacklock outlined in the light of his torch?
I have no idea. I wasn't looking at her. I was looking at the man.
What I'm getting at is, do you think he was deliberately aiming at her?
Well, I shouldn't have thought so. After all, if he just wanted to take a pot shot at Aunt Letty, there would be heaps of easier opportunities. Why get in all the friends and neighbours when he could just have shot at her from behind a hedge and probably got away with it?
One has to admit she has a point. If he wanted to commit a murder, it was an extraordinary way of going about it. Yeah. And who is Philippa Hames, another cousin?
Oh, no, no, she's no relation. She's a war widow, from rather a good family, I believe. She's got a boy who's at prep school, and she's working as a gardener at Dares Hall, about a mile away from Little Paddocks. Miss Blacklock let her have a room. She's rather sorry for her, I think. She was working in the orchard at the Hall when I went to talk to her.
I'd been working late, making the most of the light while it lasted. I got in about 5:30.
And you went in by which door?
The one at the side. It saved you going round. My boots were too muddy to come in at the front.
Was the door unlocked?
Yes. During the summer, it's usually wide open. This time of year, it's shut, but not locked. I locked it when I got in.
Do you always do that?
I've been doing it since it started to get dark at around 6. Miss Blacklock goes out to shut up the ducks last thing, but she usually goes out through the kitchen door.
And what did you do when you got in?
Kicked off my muddy boots and went up and had a bath. When I came down, I found a kind of party in progress. That was the first I'd heard about the stunt in the paper.
Did you get a look at the face of the dead man?
Yes, I did.
Was he known to you? Had you seen him before?
No, never.
You hadn't seen him when he came round to the house previously?
No. I believe he came in the middle of the morning. At that time, I'm always working here. Sorry, I can't be of more help.
And what about the girl, Mitzi? Does she have another name?
Not one that I'd like to try to pronounce. She's Middle European. A refugee. Came over here at the beginning of the war. She suffers from persecution mania, which is perfectly understandable, and is also a tremendous liar, or so I'm told.
When I saw in the paper saying there was going to be a murder, I wanted to go away. But she would not let me. I knew what would happen. I knew I should be murdered.
But you weren't murdered, were you?
No, but I could have been. She should not have made me stay. She is a hard woman.
Why don't you just tell me what happened?
All that evening, I hear things. People moving about. Once, I think someone is in the hall, moving very quietly. But it is just that Mrs. Hames coming in through the side door. She is like a Nazi herself with her blonde hair and her blue eyes, and always looking at me as if I am dirt.
Let's leave Mrs. Hames out of this, shall we?
Who does she think she is? Does she have a degree in economics like I have? No, she is just a paid labourer. Who is she to call herself a lady?
I said leave her out of it. I want you to tell me what happened.
I take the sherry and the glasses and the cheese straws and little pastries I made so nice into the drawing room. Yes. Then the bell rings and I answer the door. Again and again I answer the door. It is degrading, but I do it. And then I go back into the kitchen and I polish the silver. And I make sure that I have a big carving knife with me if anyone comes to kill me.
Very foresighted of you.
And then suddenly, I hear shots. I run through the dining room, but the door, it will not open. I am shut in there like a rat in a trap. I scream and scream and I beat on the door. Then they turn the key and let me out. And the lights come on and I see the blood and the dead body lying there. I have seen so many dead bodies.
I couldn't get any more out of her. Nothing of any use, anyway. And as for all the visitors, you've got their statements there. Colonel Easterbrook lectured me for 30 minutes on the psychology of the criminal. Miss Hinchliffe, Manly is probably the best way to describe her, talked about her pigs most of the time. And Mrs. Harmon, that's the vicar's wife, had her eyes tied shut because she didn't like being dazzled.
Mrs. Harmon? Not Diana Harmon, by any chance?
Yes, I think that's her name. Her husband calls her Bunch.
Her mother is a very old friend of mine. Bunch is by way of being an honorary niece.
Anyway, all the witnesses seem to agree on the basic facts of the matter. They saw a masked man with a revolver and a torch come through the door, and he said something like, "Hold up your hands," and then they saw...
Oh, but surely, Dermot, surely they couldn't actually have seen anything at all. If I understand rightly, there wasn't any light in the hall or on the landing.
That's right.
And so if a man stood in the doorway and flashed a powerful torch in their faces, they wouldn't be able to see anything but the torch, would they?
Why didn't I think of that?
Well, when some of them say they saw a masked man waving a gun, they are merely recapitulating from what they saw afterwards when the light came on. So it all fits in with my assumption that Rudy Schertz was the fall guy.
Fall guy, Aunt Jane?
Well, I may have got the term wrong. I'm not very clear about Americanisms. I got it from one of Mr. Dashiell Hammett's stories. A fall guy, as I understand it, means someone who will be blamed for a crime rarely committed by somebody else. Poor Rudy Schertz seems to have been exactly the right type for that. Rather stupid and probably extremely credulous.
You mean somebody persuaded him to go in and take pot shots at a room full of people?
I think that he was told it was a joke. He was paid for doing it, of course. Paid to put the advertisement in the paper and check out the house, and then, on the night in question, to put on a cloak and mask, throw open the door and shout, "Stick 'em up," or whatever he's supposed to have said.
And fire off a revolver?
Oh, no. He never had a gun.
But everyone said... Oh, I see what you mean.
Exactly. No one could possibly have seen a revolver, even if he had one. And I don't think that he had. After he called out, "Stick 'em up," somebody came up quietly behind him and fired those two shots over his shoulder. It must have frightened him to death. He swung round, and as he did so, the other person shot him and then dropped the revolver beside him. What kind of a gun was it?
It was a German make.
Oh, that doesn't mean anything nowadays, surely. The country is full of all makes of guns brought back from the war.
That's true enough. But who is this mysterious Mr. X who came up in the darkness?
You'll have to talk to Miss Blacklock about that.
She said the whole idea was nonsense.
Yes, but that was about Rudy Schertz trying to kill her. Ask if there might not be someone else. Someone out of the past, perhaps?
There's also the possibility that there was someone inside the house working with Rudy Schertz, or pretending to him that they were.
More questions, Inspector?
A few, I'm afraid, Miss Blacklock, but first there's something I have to tell you. Rudy Schertz was not the son of the proprietor of the Hotel des Alpes at Montreux. He seems to have begun his career as a hospital orderly in Bern. He was suspected of taking items of jewellery from the patients, but nothing was proved. Then he took another job, under another name, as a waiter in one of the winter sports hotels, where his speciality seems to have been making out fake bills.
Oh, I see.
He then went on to a department store in Zurich, where there was a noticeable increase in items that went missing.
A picker-up of unconsidered trifles, in fact. Then I was right in thinking I'd never met him.
Oh, quite right. I expect he happened to overhear someone mention your name when you went to have lunch at the Royal Spa Hotel and pretended to recognise you.
Yes, but why come out here when there were much richer pickings at the hotel? And why go through all that pantomime about a murder being announced?
It was a warning to you, Letty. I thought that myself at the time. I knew it wasn't a joke. I was frightened, and Mitzi was frightened too.
Ah, Mitzi. Yeah, I'd like to know rather more about that young woman.
Well, there's nothing even remotely suspicious about Mitzi. Her papers were properly in order.
So were those of Rudy Schertz. Has it occurred to you that they might have been working together? And that there may have been somebody behind both of them?
Oh, the whole idea is perfectly ridiculous. Why should anybody want to murder me? And as far as Mitzi is concerned, I think you've got an anti-foreigner complex.
I'd still like to have a word with her, if I may.
Well, I can hardly stop you, can I? But if she flounces out and locks herself in a room, I've a good mind to make you cook dinner. Oh, can't you go and suspect somebody else?
I tell you before, I locked the front door at 4:30. It was no use locking the side door because Miss Blakelock had not yet gone out to shut up the ducks.
Mrs. Hames says she locked that door when she came in at 5:30.
And you believe her?
Why shouldn't I believe her?
Oh, I think she was very careful not to lock it.
And what do you mean by that?
That young man, he does not work alone. He knows where to come, and that when he comes, a door will be left open for him.
Are you suggesting that Mrs.
Oh, what is the use? You will not believe me. I am just a foreign refugee who tells lies. But that fair-haired, blue-eyed English lady, she does not tell lies. Oh, I could tell you. Mitzi could tell you.
Tell me what?
What would you say if I told you that after the young man comes and asks Miss Blakelock for money, and she sends him away with a flea in the ear, I hear him talking afterwards with Mrs. Hames in the summer house?
You couldn't hear what was said in the summer house from here.
Aha! But you see, Mr. Policeman, I went out to gather nettles. It makes a very nice vegetable. And I hear them talking in there. He say to her, "But where can I hide?" And she say, "I will show you." And then she say, "At 6:15. And I think, "So that is how you behave, you nice English lady. I know what you want with the young men. But now I know that it was not the loving she planned, but to rob and murder."
Are you sure it was Rudy Schertz she was talking to?
Of course I am sure. And now I have told you, we will say it is all lies. Get out of my kitchen.
What?
How can I get ready the lunch? Get out! Go!
Oh, no, Inspector.
What?
Not that door. It doesn't open. You want the next one to the left to get into the drawing room.
Ah.
As a matter of fact, we used to have the hall table against it, but then we moved it over to the other wall.
When did you move it?
Oh, quite recently. About 10 days ago, I think. It was because of Philippa's flower arrangement.
Mrs. Hames?
Yes, she does them so beautifully. It was a big vase with the most wonderful autumn colours. And she said it would look much better against the bare wall than the panels of the door, so it was moved.
I see. What's the point of having two doors to the same room?
Originally, there were two rooms, but they knocked down the wall of the little sitting room to make it one big drawing room.
Ah.
We didn't need two doors, so this one is fastened up.
Do you mean it is nailed up, Miss Bunner?
No, it's just locked and bolted.
With this bolt?
Oh.
It moves very easily. When was this door last open?
Oh, not for years, I should think.
Is there a key?
Yes. It would be in the hall table. That's where all the keys are kept.
Oh, quite an assortment.
They should all be labelled. There you are. Little sitting room.
Thank you.
Oh, do be careful. There may be something resting against it on the other side. We never open it.
Don't you? This door's been opened quite recently. The lock's been oiled. So have the hinges.
But who would have done that? Do you think it could have something to do with the other night?
You see what this means, don't you, Miss Blakelock? When the lights went out, anybody in this room could have slipped out through that door and come up behind Rudy Schertz and fired at you.
Without being seen or heard or noticed?
Exactly.
And you believe that one of the people who was in this room, one of my nice neighbours, slipped out and tried to murder me? But tell me why.
I was rather hoping that you would be able to explain that.
Oh, I can't. I assure you I can't.
Well, let's approach it from another angle. Who would get your money if you were to die?
Patrick and Julia. Apart from the furniture, which I've left to Dora, along with a small annuity. But really, I haven't got very much to leave. Certainly not worth someone murdering me for. And I can't believe that Patrick and Julia are that hard up.
Do you know that for a fact?
Well, they've never said so to me. Some day, I might be worth murdering, but not now.
What do you mean by that, Miss Blakelock?
Simply that one day, quite soon, possibly, I may be a very rich woman. You see, for many years I was the secretary and close associate of Randall Girdler. He was rather before your time, I expect, but you've probably heard of him.
He was a millionaire, I believe, many times over.
Yes, that's right. When he died in 1938, he was a very rich man indeed. And since he had no children, he left his fortune in trust for his wife during her lifetime, and after that to me, absolutely. Uh-huh. So you see, Inspector, for the last 12 years, I've had an excellent motive for murdering Mrs. Girdler.
Excuse me for asking what may be an indiscreet question, but did Mrs. Girdler resent her husband's disposal of his fortune?
What you really mean is, was I Randall's mistress? No, I wasn't. He was in love with Belle, his wife, until the day he died. I think it was gratitude towards me, not reward for services rendered.
Gratitude?
Well, in his early days, before he became a big name in the financial world, he once came very close to disaster. He was in the middle of a very daring coup when he suddenly realised he hadn't the necessary funds to tide him over. He desperately needed a few thousand in actual cash, and I came to the rescue. Ah. I had a little money of my own, and I gave him everything I had.
It must have taken a good deal of nerve on your part.
I never thought twice about it. The coup came off, and he became an enormously wealthy man. After that, he treated me practically as a junior partner. But then my father died, and my sister, who was an invalid, was left all on her own. I had to give up everything and go and look after her. Randall died a couple of years later. I didn't really expect him to leave me anything. And I was astounded when I heard that his entire fortune would come to me after his wife's death. I really don't think he knew anyone else to leave it to.
And where is Mrs. Girdler now?
She lives up in Scotland. We haven't seen one another for years. You see, I went with my sister to a sanatorium in Switzerland just before the war, and she died out there. I only came back to England a couple of years ago.
You said you might be a rich woman very soon. How soon?
I heard from the nurse who looks after her that Belle is sinking rapidly. It's a matter of weeks, I believe. So you see, Inspector, if Patrick or Julia wanted to kill me, they'd be crazy not to wait a little while longer.
But what happens if you die before Mrs. Girdler? Who does the money go to then?
Well, I've never really thought about it. To Pip and Emma, I suppose.
Pip and Emma?
Yes, the children of Randall's only close relation, his sister, Sonia.
Oh.
He quarrelled with her a long time ago and they haven't spoken for years.
Why was that?
Well, she married a man who Randall thought was a crook, and worse.
And was he?
Oh, very definitely, I should say. Dimitri Stamfordis, a Greek, I think he was, or a Romanian. Very attractive to women, or so I've been told.
And Randall Girdler cut his sister out of his will when she married him.
Oh, he'd already settled pots of money on her, in such a way that her husband couldn't get his hands on it. And when his lawyers wanted him to put someone in his will, in case of my predeceasing Belle, the only people he could think of were Pip and Emma.
And what can you tell me about them?
Practically nothing, I'm afraid. Sonia once wrote to Belle telling her that she'd just had twins and that she was calling them Pip and Emma. As far as I know, she never wrote again. But Belle may be able to tell you more.
So, if one of those bullets had found its mark the other night, Pip and Emma would be in line for a very large fortune. How old would they be now?
I'm not sure. I suppose about 25, 26. Oh, but surely...
I think that somebody shot at you with intent to kill you, and it's possible that this person will try again. I want you to be very careful, Miss Blacklock. One murder has been arranged that didn't come off. I fear that another may be arranged very soon.
I didn't expect you back again, Inspector. What is it this time?
I'm sorry always to bother you when you're at work, Mrs. Hames, but I thought it might be easier for us to talk away from Little Paddocks.
It all sounds very mysterious.
A certain statement was made to me this morning. A statement that concerns you, Mrs. Hames.
Well?
You told me that Rudy Schertz was quite unknown to you.
Yes, that's right.
That when you saw his body in the drawing room that night, it was the first time you'd ever set eyes on him.
Of course it was. What's all this about?
You did not, for instance, have a conversation with him in the summer house at Little Paddocks?
In the summer house?
Yes, Mrs. Hames.
Who says so?
I'm told that you had a conversation with this man, Rudy Schertz, and that he asked you where he could hide, and you replied that you would show him. And then a time, 6:15, was definitely mentioned.
That would have been roughly the time that Schertz would get to Little Paddock's by the bus from Medenham Wells on the evening of the hold-up.
I don't know who told you that, but I could hazard a guess. It's a very silly story and very spiteful. For some reason, Mitzi dislikes me even more than she dislikes the others.
You deny it?
Of course I deny it. I never met Rudy Schertz in my life, and I was never near the summer house that morning. I was over here working.
Which morning?
Every morning. I'm here every morning. I don't get away for lunch until 1 o'clock. You shouldn't waste your time listening to what Mitzi tells you. I'm afraid she's a pathological liar.
So which of them am I to believe? Everyone says that Mitzi tells lies all the time, but why should Philippa Hames say she wasn't in the summer house that morning? I never mentioned any time of day. And I could swear there was a touch of fear in her voice when she heard the word summer house.
I think I should like to take a look at Mrs. Hames, and I shall soon have the opportunity.
How do you mean, Aunt Jane?
I have arranged to stay at Chipping Cleghorn Vicarage for a few days with the Harmons.
Is that wise, do you think?
Oh, yes. It will be perfectly all right. Bunch's mother and father are very old friends, and it is the most natural thing in the world that I should come and stay with her for a few days, since it is so close to Medenham Wells.
Oh, very well, but don't snoop around. I have a feeling it isn't very safe.
It would be very odd and very noticeable if I didn't. Old women always snoop. Questions about mutual friends in different parts of the world and whether they remember so-and-so, and who it was that Lady Thingamajig's daughter married, all that helps, doesn't it?
Helps in what way?
Helps to find out if people really are who they say they are. Because that's what's worrying you, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Everything has changed so since the war. 15 years ago, in a place like St. Mary Mead or Chipping Cleghorn, everybody knew who everybody was. People had lived there for generation after generation. But it is not like that anymore. Mm. Every village and small country place is full of people who've just come and settled there. And all you know about them is what they tell you themselves.
Yes, that's certainly part of the problem. My mind keeps going back to the oiled lock and bolt on that door. Someone may not be the harmless country neighbour they make themselves out to be.
Exactly.
And then there are Pip and Emma. Just a couple of names, and nicknames at that. Maybe they're just perfectly respectable citizens living somewhere miles away on the continent, but they could be sitting tight in Chipping Cleghorn. What about Patrick and Julia Simmons, for instance? I wonder how long ago it was that Miss Blacklock had seen them before they turned up at Little Paddock's.
I'll find out for you, shall I?
Now, please, don't take any risks.
It will be quite safe, Dermot. You really need not worry.
I'm going to be away for the next 48 hours.
Oh?
I shall be in Scotland, talking to Mrs. Girdler. Trying to find out a little more about Pip and Emma.
And have you warned Miss Blacklock to be careful?
I've warned her, but I'm not sure that she'll pay much heed to it. To tell you the truth, I'm far more concerned about you, Miss Marple.
Oh.
I don't want you putting yourself in any kind of danger.
Don't worry about me, Dermot. I can take care of myself. And in any case, we do need a little bait to lure whoever it is out into the open, don't we?
What I hate most about it is having to lock the front door every time one goes out. I never worried about it in the past. After all, we haven't got very much to burgle.
But the hold-up must have been very frightening. Bunch has been telling me all about it.
Not that I knew very much. I had my eyes tight shut all the time.
Oh, it was absolutely terrifying, Miss Marple. And Letty had such a lucky escape.
It really seems like providence that the thief should have tripped up and shot himself. Burglars are so violent nowadays, aren't they? How did he get in?
The police seem to think that he slipped in through the side door while I was out shutting up the duct.
Oh, Letty, I forgot to tell you that when he was last here, the inspector insisted on opening the door over there, the one we never use.
He said it had been oiled quite recently, and it must have...
Yes, I know, Dora. He told me about it, too, but I don't think he wants it talked about.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Lottie. I mean, how stupid I am.
And I'm so sorry, Mrs. Harmon. I'm sure you understand.
Oh, we won't breathe a word, will we, Aunt Jane?
Oh, I'm so sorry, Lottie. I'm always saying the wrong thing. I'm nothing but a trial to you.
You are a great comfort to me, Dora. And in a place like Chipping Cleghorn, there really aren't any secrets that can be kept for very long.
That is true. I'm afraid you know that things do get around in the most extraordinary way. Servants, of course. But it can't be only that, because there are so few servants about nowadays. Still, there are the daily women, and perhaps they are worse, because they go to everybody in turn and pass the news along.
Ah, of course, I see it now. If that door could be open, then someone could have gone out of here when the lights were switched off and come in by the other door and done the hold-up. But that can't be right, because it was the man from the Royal Spa Hotel that did it.
Well, did it all happen in this room, then? I'm afraid you must think me very inquisitive, Miss Blacklock, but it really is so exciting.
Are we too late for tea?
Oh, sorry, Aunt Letty. Didn't realise you had guests.
Oh, Miss Marple, these are my cousins, Patrick and Julia Simmons.
How do you do, Miss Marple?
How do you do?
Good afternoon, Mrs. Harmon.
Hello.
How do you do?
Hello, Patrick. Hello, Julia. We were just telling Miss Marple all about the hold-up.
Oh, not again. It's really such a bore.
Nonsense! We can give Miss Marple a reenactment of the whole scene. I'll go out and be the hold-up man.
Oh, very well. It all started just as the clock chimed 6:30. Ding-dong, 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 ding-dong.
And then all of a sudden, the lights went out.
It was so very frightening.
Stick 'em up! Stick 'em up, I tell you!
And he was flashing a torch straight at us. I shut my eyes tight.
And then he fired the gun. Bang! Bang!
One of the shots just missed Letty. It grazed her ear.
And then he fired again. Bang!
And he fell down on the floor.
And Mitzi was locked in the dining room, screaming her head off.
Yes, thank you very much, Julia. We can do without that.
If you care to come over here, Miss Marple, I'll show you the bullet holes. Letty had such a narrow escape.
Is this where you were standing, Miss Blacklock?
Yes, I was just going to offer the guests a cigarette.
People are so careless when they're smoking. Look at the burn marks somebody made on this table.
Sometimes I'm afraid we get too concerned for our possessions.
But it's such a lovely table, Letty.
It certainly is very attractive. And what a pretty lamp. A Dresden shepherd, isn't it?
It's one of a pair. It used to be a shepherdess down here. I wonder where it's gone.
Oh. You care for my things much more than I do, Dora. Even though you do muddle them up sometimes.
Well, I can't help it. I'd like nice furniture and ornaments.
I must confess that my own few possessions are very dear to me, too. They bring back so many memories, you know. It's the same with photographs. People nowadays have so very few photographs about. I like to keep all the pictures of my nephews and nieces as babies and their children and so on.
You've got a horrible one of me aged 3, Aunt Jane, holding a fox terrier and squinting.
And I'm sure there are many pictures here of you, Mr. Simmons.
Oh, Julia and I are only very distant cousins.
Well, I believe that Eleanor did send me one of you when you were a baby, Patrick. But I'm afraid I didn't keep it. You'd have really forgotten how many children she had, or what their names were, until she wrote to me a couple of months ago to tell me you were over here.
Another sign of the times. Nowadays, one so often does not know one's young relatives at all. In the old days, we used to have such wonderful family reunions.
Yes, I last saw Patrick and Julia's mother at a wedding. It's been nearly 30 years ago. Oh, she was such a pretty girl.
That's why she has such handsome children.
And yet you don't look at all alike.
You've got a marvellous old photograph album, Aunt Letty. We were looking through it the other day. The hats.
Well, I'm sure we all thought we looked very smart. And now we can hardly recognise ourselves.
Did you do that on purpose, Aunt Jane? Talk about the photographs, I mean.
Well, yes, I did, as a matter of fact. And it is interesting that Miss Blacklock did not know either of her young cousins by sight.
Suppose it is rather curious.
Tell me, does she always wear that pearl choker?
I certainly can't remember her without it. Why do you ask?
Oh, it's of no consequence. It's such a contrast to the rest of her appearance.
Can those pearls be real, do you think?
I can't imagine someone like Miss Blacklock wearing them if they aren't. But I do see what you mean. If they're real, they must be worth a small fortune.
There were very few places of real interest in Chipping Cleghorn. There was a church with a window that might have been by Burne Jones, and what was supposed to be part of a Saxon coffin lid. There was a half-timbered inn called the Red Cow, a haberdasher's, an ironmonger's, and an antique shop, situated conveniently next door to the Bluebird Tea Rooms, so that rich motorists, stopping off for a cup of tea and what were euphemistically described as homemade cakes of a bright saffron colour, might be tempted by the items carefully displayed in the window. I was looking at a mug with a present from Tunbridge Wells on it, when I happened to notice Dora Bunner going into the tea rooms and decided it was time for a nice cup of morning coffee.
Do try one of the cakes, Miss Marple. They really are quite good.
Oh, thank you. And the coffee really is such a comfort, particularly on a morning like this. Tell me, who was that pretty girl I noticed when Bunch and I were walking back from taking tea with you yesterday? She does the gardening, I believe, and has a name like Hines?
Oh, that's our lodger, Mrs. Hames. Such a nice, quiet girl. A lady, if you understand me.
I used to know a Colonel Hames in the Irish Cavalry. Could he have been her father, do you know?
She's Mrs. Hames. Her husband was killed in the war. In Sicily, I believe. Of course, he might have been his father.
Yes. I was so interested to hear that you had been at school with Miss Blacklock. There is something particularly pleasing about friendships that go on for a long time.
Oh, I do so agree, Miss Marple. And there are very few people who would be so loyal to their friends as dear Miss Blacklock. Those days do seem such a long time ago now. Such a pretty girl she was then, and enjoyed life so much. It seems so sad.
Yes, life can be very hard.
And sad affliction bravely borne. I always think of that verse. Such courage and patience ought to be rewarded. That is what I say. I feel that nothing can be too good for Miss Blacklock. And whatever good things do come to her, she does so deserve them.
Money can do a lot to ease one's path through life.
Money? I don't believe that unless one has really experienced lack of it, one can know what it is like to be hungry and living off a slice or two of bread and a scrape of margarine and a jar of meat paste and just longing for a plate of meat and two vegetables and always the rent to be paid or you'll be out on the street. One's old age pension doesn't go far these days.
Indeed, it does not.
I just happened to see Letty's name in the paper. A charity lunch in aid of some hospital, I think it was. And I thought, perhaps she'll remember me. She's someone I could ask for a little help. Someone who'll know that I'm not just a writer of begging letters. And Lottie just came and took me away. Said she needed help to run the house. Of course, I was very surprised. But the newspapers sometimes do get things wrong. How kind she was, and remembering all the old days so well. I'd do anything for her. And what's so nice about her is that she always pretends how useful I am to her. That's real kindness, isn't it?
Yes, that is real kindness.
I'm not really as stupid as I look. I can see when Letty's being imposed upon, and can see she's too trusting.
That can be a mistake.
That Patrick. Twice, to my knowledge, he's got money out of her, and all she says is, the boy's young, Dora. Youth is the time to have your fling.
I suppose that is true, in a way.
You won't breathe a word, will you, Miss Marple? But I can't help feeling that he was mixed up in this dreadful business. I think he knew that young man, or Julia did. One of them put him up to it. And there's another thing that worries me. That detective saying the door had been oiled. Because, you see, I saw...
Most difficult for you. Naturally, you don't want anything to get round to the police.
That's just it. I lie awake at night worrying about it. You see, I came across Patrick in the shrubbery the other day when I was looking for eggs, and he had a cup in his hand, an oily cup. And when he saw me, he looked quite guilty and said, I was wondering what this was doing here. Of course I didn't say anything.
No, of course not.
And if you ask me, Patrick had been tampering with that lamp in the drawing room because I remember it was definitely the shepherdess, not the shepherd. And the next day...
Coffee and gossip, Dora. Good morning, Miss Marple.
Oh, good morning.
Oh, it is cold, isn't it?
Hello. Am I too late for coffee?
Oh, no, please sit down, Bunch. Will you join us, Miss Blacklock?
Well, thank you, but we must be getting home. Have you finished your shopping, Dora?
Yes, thank you, Letty. Goodbye, Miss Marple.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mrs. Harmon.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
I must just pop into the chemist for a bottle of aspirin and some corn blasters.
What were you talking about?
Family solidarity is a very strange thing, Bunch. Do you remember a case where a husband was accused of poisoning his wife? At the trial, his daughter said that she'd drunk half her mother's glass, and that knocked the case against her father to pieces. They say the daughter never spoke to the father again. Of course, a father is one thing, and a distant cousin or a nephew or whatever it is different, but there it is. No one wants to see a member of their family hanged, do they?
Are you suggesting that these Pip and Emma people might be Patrick and Julia? Of course, when you come to think about it, they're the only people it could be. They're the only ones who are the right age.
Yes, but it isn't as simple as that. We are not necessarily thinking about a brother and sister. Pip could have a wife, or Emma a husband. And then there's Pip and Emma's mother, Sonia. If Miss Blacklock hasn't seen her since she was a girl, she probably wouldn't recognise her now. She could be living in the village. I only hope that Mrs. Girdler may be able to throw some light on the matter. Inspector Craddock should be with her by now.
If you're wondering why my husband wanted all his money to go to Blackie after my death...
Blackie?
Miss Blacklock.
Ah.
Anyway, it wasn't for the reason that I'm sure you're thinking. Randall was never in the least in love with her, nor she with him. I don't think she was ever in love. She wasn't very pretty, and she didn't care for clothes. I think he looked on her more as a younger brother. And she kept him out of trouble more than once, you know.
She told me she came to his rescue once with money.
She did more than that. She kept him straight. She was a very good person. And you can't use that word about many people. No. Her sister was an invalid. She had a deformity of some sort, and she never saw people or went out. When their father died, she gave up everything to look after her sister. Randall was furious with her, but it made no difference. If her mind was set on doing something, nothing would move her.
How long was that before your husband died?
A couple of years, I think. Randall made his will before she left the firm, and he didn't alter it. He said to me, we've no one of our own. After you and I are gone, Blackie had better have the money. She'll play the markets and make them sit up.
She enjoyed the money-making game, then?
Oh, yes. It wasn't just the money, though. It was the adventure, the risk, the excitement of it all.
Can you tell me a little about your husband's sister? I gather that he quarrelled with her over her marriage to Mr. Samfordis.
Randall said he was a crook. But Sonia was madly in love with him. She was 24, very beautiful, and knew exactly what she was doing.
And do you ever hear anything from her?
Oh, the last time I heard from her was over 25 years ago. Uh-huh. She was in Budapest. She asked me to tell Randall she was very happy and had just had twins.
And did she tell you their names?
She said that as they'd been born just after midday, she intended to call them Pip and Emma. That may just have been a joke, of course.
And you didn't hear from her again?
No. I never heard any more.
Nevertheless, Mr. Girdler left his estate to Sonia's children in the event of Miss Blacklock predeceasing you.
Oh, that was my doing. Huh? I said to him, I know Blackie is as strong as a horse, and I'm a delicate creature. But there's such a thing as accidents, you know. And there's such a thing as creaking gates. And he said, but there's no one. Absolutely no one. And I said, there's Sonia. And he said at once, I'm not letting that Stamfordis fellow have my money. So I said, well, her children then. And so he grumbled, but put it in.
And from that day to this, you've heard nothing of your sister-in-law or her children?
Nothing. They went right out of our lives. They may be dead. They may be anywhere.
And if Miss Blacklock dies before you do, they will inherit your husband's fortune?
Don't let them hurt Blackie. You mustn't let any harm come to her.
You're tired, Mrs. Girdler. I'll go.
There's not long now. Not long before I'm dead. It's dangerous for her. Look after her.
It's Miss Bunner's birthday today, Mitzi, and we're going to have a little tea party for her. Some of the neighbours will be coming, and I'd like you to make that wonderful cake you do so well.
At her age, one does not have birthdays. It is better to forget.
Well, Dora doesn't want to forget.
It is the cake with the chocolate icing you want me to make?
Yes, Mitzi, the rich one. I can't remember what it's called.
The one Mr. Patrick says is delicious death.
Yes, that's the one.
Delicious death. I will not have my cake called that.
It was a compliment, really, Mitzi. He meant that it was worth dying to eat such a cake.
But I do not like that word, death. And remember what happened when we last had people in the house?
Well, I assure you it won't happen this time, Mitzi. And now I really must get on.
Oh, Letty, there you are. I was going to have a word with Mitzi about the sandwiches.
Oh, no, Dora, come away. I really don't want her disturbed.
But I could just show her how to cut them properly.
No, please don't show her anything, Dora.
Well, if you say so, Letty, I'm going to enjoy my birthday. Colonel Easterbrook rang up just now to wish me many happy returns of the day and said he was bringing me a pot of honey and a surprise present. Ooh. I can't think how he knew about it.
Everybody seems to know. You've been talking about it, Dora.
Well, I did just happen to mention that today I should be 59.
You, 64.
And Miss Hinchliffe says, you don't look it. What age do you think I am? Which was rather awkward because Miss Hinchliffe might be almost any age. She said she was going to bring me some eggs.
Wow, we're doing quite well out of your birthday, Dora. There's honey and eggs and that magnificent box of chocolates from Julia.
And that lovely brooch you gave me.
Ah, do you like it? I'm so glad. I never care for jewellery.
I love it. You're so good to me, Letty.
Nearly all the neighbours came to Little Paddock's that afternoon to wish Dora Bunner a happy birthday and have a slice of Mitzi's delicious death. Colonel Easterbrook gave her a bag of sweets with a note saying, sweets to the sweet. And Miss Murgatroyd brought a handful of late roses. Unfortunately, Bunch had the Dorcas group that afternoon, so that I had no good reason to attend the party.
I'm glad that Miss Marple didn't come. That woman is the nasty prying kind, the sort that nothing is safe from.
Well, now that all the guests have gone, why don't we have a drop of sherry? Will you have a glass, Philippa?
I'd love one, Patrick.
Me too. Did you enjoy your birthday, Dora?
Oh, I did. But I've got a terrible headache. It's the excitement, I think.
Yes, the cake. I feel a bit liverish myself. Here you are, Philippa.
Thanks.
I feel a bit queasy too. Of course, you were nibbling chocolates all morning, Dora.
The truth is, we're not used to all these rich things.
I'll go and lie down, I think.
That'll probably be best.
The trouble is, I can't find my aspirins anywhere.
I think you'd be better off with a glass of sherry. As my old nurse used to say, it will settle your stomach.
No, I think aspirin would be better.
Well, take some of mine. They're on the table by my bed.
There are some on my dressing table.
But I had a new bottle. What can have become of it?
Well, there are heaps in the bathroom. The whole house is simply bursting with aspirins.
It vexes me not to be able to find mine. But, thank you all the same.
Poor old Dora. Do you think we should have given her some sherry?
Better not, I think. She's had a lot of excitement today, and it really isn't good for her. Still, I really do think she enjoyed it.
She loved it.
Shall I clear the things away now?
You just sit down and take it easy, Mitzi. I'm going to get you a glass of sherry for the best cook in the world.
I am not really a cook. In my country, I do intellectual things.
Then you're wasted. What are the achievements of the intellect compared to delicious death?
I do not like you to call it that.
Here's your sherry. That's my name for it, and here's to it. Let's all drink to delicious death, and to hell with the after effects. Delicious death!
Philippa, my dear, I want to talk to you. There's nothing wrong, is there?
No, Letty. Why should there be?
You're not worrying about money or something like that?
I'm quite all right.
Well, I know you get anxious sometimes about Harry's education. That's why I want to tell you something. I drove into Milchester this morning to see Mr. Beddington. I thought that, in view of certain circumstances, it was time to make a new will. Apart from Dora's legacy, I'm leaving everything to you.
But I don't want it. I really don't, in any way. Why to me?
Because there's no one else.
But there's Patrick and Julia.
Yes, there's Patrick and Julia.
Well, they are your relations, after all.
Very distant ones. They have no claim on me.
But I've no claims at all. I really don't want it.
I know what I'm doing, Philippa. I've become fond of you. And there's the boy. You won't get very much if I should die now. But in a few weeks' time, it might be different.
But you're not going to die.
Well, not if I can avoid it by taking certain precautions.
Precautions?
Yes. Think it over. And stop worrying yourself, Philippa. Oh, Julia, I didn't know you were still up. Is the side door locked?
Oh, yes. Every door is barred and bolted and locked. Good night, Aunt Letty.
Good night, Julia.
Well, well, Philippa. You've played your cards very cleverly, haven't you? I see you're one of the quiet ones.
You mean you heard?
I rather think I was meant to hear.
What do you mean?
Oh, Letty's no fool. You're sitting pretty, aren't you?
I had no idea. I never meant to...
Didn't you? Of course you did. But just remember this. If anyone bumps off Aunt Letty, you'll be suspect number one.
And why should I do that? I'd be an idiot if I killed her now.
So, you know all about Mrs. What's-her-name, dying up in Scotland?
No, it was just that Letty was telling...
Philippa, I'm beginning to think you're a very dark horse indeed.
I don't want to do you and Patrick out of anything.
Don't you, dear? I'm sorry, but I don't believe you.
So it's beginning to look as if we should be concentrating on Pip and Emma. If only we could establish that Miss Blacklock hadn't seen Patrick and Julia since they were children.
Oh, but I've done that, Dermot. Hmm? I had a little talk with Letty Blacklock, and...
And you just happened to get that out of her, hmm?
Well...
The only problem is that they appear to be who they say they are. Sir Henry got in touch with our consul in Monte Carlo, who rang their mother, Mrs. Simmons, in Cannes. She says that her children are very definitely staying with Miss Blacklock at Little Paddock's.
And Mrs. Simmons really is Mrs. Simmons?
I fear so. Sir Henry made a particular point of confirming that. So, what have you been doing while I've been away, hmm? Nothing too risky, I hope?
I had sherry with Miss Hinchliffe and Miss Murgatroyd at Boulder's. Mm-hmm. I've had tea with Colonel Easterbrook and his wife, and admired their Indian curios.
And are they who they say they are?
I'm not entirely certain about Colonel Easterbrook. You see, I just happened to mention a cousin of mine who'd been at a hill station.
Excuse me, Inspector.
Yes?
There's a call for you from the Milchester police.
Where's the phone, Mrs. Harmon?
It's out in the hall, Inspector.
Thank you.
Did they say what it was about?
Oh, yes, they did. It's Dora Bunner. They found her dead in her bed this morning, and the doctor isn't satisfied that it was natural. Narcotic poisoning. That's his guess.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Miss Bunner went upstairs to lie down after her birthday party. It had all proved a bit too much for her, and she had a headache. She couldn't find her own bottle of aspirin, and she took some from a bottle by Miss Blacklock's bed. We don't know what was in the tablets. The doctor sent them off to be analysed, but it definitely wasn't aspirin.
And yesterday, all the neighbours were in the house celebrating her birthday.
Eating a cake called Delicious Death, apparently. And the people who were there were almost exactly the same crowd who were present at the time of the hold-up. Any one of them could have nipped upstairs and substituted the pills in the bottle in Miss Blacklock's bedroom. Or anyone living in the house, come to think of it.
What I really needed was an excuse to get into Little Paddock's. And Bunch, very conveniently, provided me with one. Her husband, the vicar, was with a dying parishioner, and Bunch had her own little emergency, so she suggested that I should go to see Miss Blacklock to convey their condolences.
And now I really must rush. I hope the walk won't be too much for you.
Mitzi showed me into the drawing-room, and for a few moments I had the scene of the hold-up all to myself. Dora Bunner had said to me that she suspected Patrick Simmons had tampered with a lamp to make the lights go out before the intruder burst in. She had mentioned something about there being a pair of lamps, a shepherd and a shepherdess. At the time of the hold-up, the shepherdess was on the table, and yet the following day the shepherd lamp had been substituted. But why?
I hope I've not kept you waiting, Miss Marple.
I'm very sorry to intrude at such a time, but the vicar is with a parishioner who is gravely ill, and Mrs. Harmon has had to take one of the children to hospital. I was asked to give you this note.
Oh, thank you. Ah, it's a very understanding man. No fatuous commiseration.
He wanted me to tell you that he believed Miss Bunner's favourite hymn was Lead Kindly Light.
Oh. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It's just that Dora was my only link with the past and the only one who remembered. Now she's gone and I'm alone.
Oh, I do understand. One is alone when the last one who remembers is gone. I have nephews and nieces and kind friends, but there is no one who knew me as a young girl. I've been alone for quite a long time.
You understand very well, Miss Marple.
Oh, I didn't expect to find you here, Miss Marple. Rather early in the day for you, isn't it?
I am here on an errand for Reverend Harmon, but I shall not stay. I shan't hamper you in your inquiries, Inspector.
Good morning, Inspector. Miss Marple, could you please tell Reverend Harmon that I shall be in this afternoon, if he's able to call?
I will. Goodbye, Miss Blacklock. Goodbye, Inspector.
Goodbye, Miss Marple.
Goodbye, Miss Marple. And thank you.
I won't waste time offering you sympathy, Miss Blacklock. I feel very badly about Miss Bunner's death. We ought to have been able to prevent it.
I don't see how you could have done. Dora is dead through taking aspirin tablets that were meant for me. It may be Patrick or Julia or Philippa or Mitzi next. Somebody young with their whole life in front of them. Somebody who drinks a glass of wine that's poured out for me or eats a chocolate that is sent for me. Who's doing this, Inspector? Did Mrs. Girdler tell you anything?
Not very much, I'm afraid. She confirmed that Pip and Emma would be the ones to benefit by your death, but we seem to have drawn a bit of a blank over them. Can you tell me a little about their mother?
Sonia Girdler, or Sonia Stamfordis. That's her married name.
Would you recognise her if you saw her?
I don't know that I would. It must be nearly 30 years since we met.
What was she like? What do you remember about her?
Oh, she was very attractive. Small, vivacious.
She may not be so vivacious now. Could she be any of the women who were here when the intruder broke in? Mrs. Easterbrook, for instance?
Oh, it doesn't seem very likely. I think the Colonel met her when he was out in India.
Have you got a photograph of Sonia?
I've probably got some old snapshots in an album somewhere.
Could I have a look at them?
Oh, of course. Now, where did I put them? I came across them only the other day when I was clearing out one of the cupboards. Julia was helping me.
Well, I'll go and find her. You've got quite enough on your mind at the moment. Do you know where I can find her?
I've no idea, I'm afraid.
Miss Simmons? Miss Simmons? Miss Simmons!
Who is it? Oh, it's you, Inspector. I was up in the attic. What is it?
I wanted to see the old photograph albums that you and Miss Blacklock were looking at the other day, please.
Oh, yes, I know. I put them in the big cupboard in the study. I'll find them for you.
Are these the ones?
Yes. What is it you're looking for?
Ah, so that's where we put them. Oh, now, the ones you're after should be in this album, on the third or fourth page. Now, the other book is after she married. It ought to be here.
Just empty spaces. But you're quite right. Someone's written Sonia Self RG, Sonia and Belle, Charlotte Self Sonia.
There weren't any blank spaces when we were looking the other day, were there, Julia?
Well, I wasn't looking very closely. Just at the dresses and the hats. But all the pictures seem to be there.
Somebody has removed every photo of Sonia Girdler from this album. Tell me, is Mrs. Hames working over at Dais Hall this morning?
No, she didn't go over there today. You'll find her in the garden, I think.
So what is it this time?
I think you said, Mrs. Hames, that your husband had been killed in Italy during the war.
Well?
Wouldn't it have been better to tell us the truth? That he was a deserter from his regiment?
Do you have to rake up everything?
We expect people to tell us the truth.
So what are you going to do about it? Tell everyone? Is that really necessary?
Does nobody know?
Nobody here. And I don't want my son to know, ever. His father was killed in the war, and that's all it amounts to.
But your husband is still alive.
Perhaps. How should I know?
When did you last see him, Mrs. Hames?
I haven't seen him for years.
You're quite sure he didn't come here a couple of weeks ago?
What do you mean by that?
I never entirely believed that story about you meeting Rudy Schertz in the summer house. But Mitzi saw you there with somebody. I suggest that the man who came there to meet you was your husband.
I didn't meet anyone in the summer house.
Deserters are often desperate men. They're often involved in raids and hold-ups. And they have foreign revolvers they brought back from abroad.
I don't know where my husband is. I haven't seen him for years, and that's all I have to say.
We never traced that gun, you know. It certainly didn't belong to Rudy Schertz. I need to establish whether anybody in Chipping Cleghorn has a revolver.
Colonel Easterbrook has one, I believe.
Hmm? How do you know that, Bunch?
Mrs. Bott told me. She's my daily. She does for a lot of the people in the village. Being a military gentleman, she said, he'd naturally have a revolver in the house. It would be very handy if burglars happened to come along.
Colonel Easterbrook.
It's like those pointer things at fairs, isn't it? Go round and round and stop at something different every time.
Didn't you say there was something rather fishy about him, Miss Marple?
Only that he claimed to have been in Pindy, but had never heard of a cousin of mine who would have been out there at the same time. Hardly conclusive.
He went out to Little Paddock's to leave a book a couple of days before the hold-up, and he could easily have oiled the lock of that door then. And he was at Dora Bunner's birthday party. I think I'll try and find out a little more about Colonel Easterbrook. I'll drop in later, if I may, Mrs. Harmon.
Of course, Inspector, any time you like.
Thank you.
Oh, I do wish that poor boy wouldn't rush off at the least hint of a possible lead. What this case needs is a little quiet thought.
I'd better be off. I've got to go into Milchester to discuss the plans for the new village hall. I'll put a lamp on for you before I go. It's so gloomy.
Thank you.
I'll put it on the side table. Oh, the flex doesn't look too healthy. It's the cat. He will gnaw away at it. Oh. He'll get a nasty electric shock one day. I'll just move these flowers out of the way. Oh, I must have filled the vase too full. Still, no harm done.
No. Where do I turn it on?
There's a little switch there. That's fused the lights. I must have spilt the water on that bit of worn flex. It's left a burn mark on the table, too.
I'll go and fix the fuse.
You'll do no such thing, Bunch. You'll miss your bus. There's quite enough light, really. I just want to sit quietly and think something through. Something I should have seen a long time ago.
Now then, Murgatroyd, we are going to have another go at solving these murders.
But we've been over it all time and again, Hinch, and we've got nowhere.
Ah, but that was before Mrs. Bott told us the second door to the drawing room could be opened. It changes the whole picture.
I don't see how.
It means that the man from the Royal Spa Hotel didn't necessarily fire the gun. Someone could have come up from behind him and done it.
But who could it have been?
That's what we're going to work out, Murgatroyd. Whoever did it must have been the same person who put the poisoned tablets in the bottle by Letty's bed. And that can't have been Rudy Schertz, because he's dead. We are looking for someone who was at Little Paddock's on the night of the hold-up, and who was at the birthday party for Dora as well. The only person that lets out is Mrs. Harmon, because she couldn't come to the birthday.
But I don't see how anybody could possibly have substituted the tablets.
We all went to the loo, didn't we? And I washed my hands in the bathroom because of the sticky cake. And little simpering Mrs. Easterbrook powdered her silly face in Miss Blacklock's bedroom, didn't she?
Laura Easterbrook? Do you really think she
I
might
don't
have...
know. If she did, she was being pretty obvious. But it might have been a kind of double bluff.
None of the men went upstairs.
There are the back stairs as well, don't forget. And if a man goes to the loo, you don't follow him to see where he's going, do you? Anyway, let's concentrate on the night of the hold-up. I want you to try and remember exactly what you saw. Now, where was everybody just before the lights went out? You were standing beside the door.
Yes, and when it crashed open, it was between me and the man, Rudy Schertz, and it knocked my corn.
I do wish you'd go to a proper chiropodist instead of messing around with your feet by yourself. You'll get blood poisoning one of these days. Now, come on. Try to remember where everybody else was.
I am trying, Hinch.
I'm standing against the mantelpiece with my tongue hanging out for a drink, and Patrick's taking an eternity to get round with the sherry. Letty Blacklock is by the table near the arch, getting the cigarettes. Patrick goes into the other part of the room to get more glasses.
Yes, I remember that.
And then there was someone who followed him over there. Philippa Hames it was. I remember that distinctly because I noticed what a nice flat back she'd gotten, that she'd look good on a horse. I don't know exactly where she went, because at that moment the lights went out.
It gave me such a fright.
Now we're all in the dark. And the young man bursts in and starts waving the torch about. This is where you come in, Murgatroyd.
But I couldn't see anything at all.
Oh, yes, you could. From where you were standing, you were facing the same way as Rudy Schertz, the way the torch was pointing. The rest of us were dazzled by it, but you weren't because the door was in between.
Oh, yes, but I couldn't see anything much. The torch was waving round and round.
Yes, but it must have stopped on people's faces.
Yes, it did.
Then you must have seen somebody. Think. Try and remember.
There was Miss Bunner, with her mouth wide open.
Good! Go on!
And Mrs. Harmon, with her eyes tight shut.
Good! You've got the idea. When we've eliminated who you did see, we can get to the really important part. Whoever it was that you couldn't see. Think carefully. Was there someone who definitely wasn't there?
I remember seeing the flowers on the table and the big armchair. The torch didn't get round as far as you, Hinch, and then it moved over to...
Blast! Just a minute. Keep on concentrating, Murgatroyd. 831. Yes? What?
I can see Colonel Easterbrook. At least I think so. And then the torch moved again and... But that's extraordinary.
You mean to say that poor animal's been there since first thing this morning, and you've only just got round to ringing me up about it? I'll have the SPCA on you. An oversight? Is that all you've got to say? That was the station.
They've had that red setter we were to pick up since 8 o'clock this morning without a drop of water. I'm going to get her right away.
But Hinch, it's the most extraordinary thing.
You'll have to tell me all about it when I get back. I can't wait for you to get changed. You've got your bedroom slippers on as usual.
But wait, Hinch! I've got to tell you!
When I come back!
But Hinch! She wasn't there!
The shepherdess. Violets. Delicious death.
Is there anyone there?
Yes, I am here. Miss Marple?
Why are you sitting in the dark?
The lights have all fused.
I've got to use the telephone. Ours seems to be out of order.
It's just here.
I've got a lighter.
But you're trembling all over. What is the matter? What's happened?
It's Murgatroyd. I found her outside the cottage. She's dead. She's been strangled. Thank you for coming back with me, Miss Marple. I couldn't have faced it on my own.
The police will be here very soon.
What makes it all so horrible was that we'd turned it into a kind of game. And murder isn't a game.
No. Murder is not a game.
I was trying to get her to remember who was in the room on the night of the hold-up. After the lights had gone out and that man forced his way into the room. I wanted her to tell me which faces she could remember seeing. And then the phone rang. If only I'd stayed and listened to her. That damn dog could have waited another half hour. It had been there all day. She came out and shouted after me. And that's why she was killed.
Don't blame yourself, my dear. It does no good.
I thought I heard someone tapping at the window, but I was too caught up in what we were doing to notice. We were shouting at each other at the tops of our voices. She must have heard it. She could have heard it all.
She? How do you know it was a she?
Because of what Murgatroyd said.
And what was that?
Just one sentence. She wasn't there. You see, there were three women we hadn't eliminated. Mrs. Easterbrook, Mrs. Hames, and Julia Simmons. And one of those three wasn't there. She wasn't there in the drawing room because she'd slipped out through the other door and into the hall behind Rudy's shirts.
Yes, I see.
It's one of those three women. I don't know which.
Excuse me, but did Miss Murgatroyd say it exactly as you said it?
I don't understand what you mean.
Oh, dear. How can I explain? You said it like this. She wasn't there. With an equal emphasis on every word. But there are three ways you can say it. You could say, she wasn't there. Or again, she wasn't there. As if to confirm some suspicion. Or you could say, she wasn't there.
How the hell can I remember? I simply don't know. Does it make any difference?
Yes, I think it does. It might make quite a lot of difference. But the police are here. I think I'd better be getting on my way.
We've had a late afternoon delivery.
Well, that makes a change. It's generally a privilege for the postman even to manage one delivery a day.
Two for you.
Mm-hmm.
And one for me. A letter from Harry.
Oh, it's the bill from Carter's for repairing the kitchen boiler. Quite preposterous. But I expect anybody else would be just as bad. I've no idea who this is from. So I don't recognise the writing. This doesn't make sense. Are Patrick and Julia back, do you know?
Yes, I saw them a few minutes ago. They got soaked in the rain. They went upstairs to change.
Would you tell them I'd like to talk to them, please?
Of course.
No, wait a minute. I want you to read the letter yourself.
Dear Cousin Letty, I hope it'll be all right for me to come to you on Tuesday. I wrote to Patrick 2 days ago, but he hasn't answered, so I presume it's all right. Mother is coming to England next month and hopes to see you then. My train arrives at Chipping Cleghorn at 6:15, if that's convenient. Yours affectionately, Julia Simmons. I don't understand.
Nor do I, but I think it's about time I did. Get Julia and Patrick, if you please, and I'd like you to stay with me to hear what they have to say.
I should have known that something like this would happen sooner or later. I meant to send her a telegram, but it went right out of my mind.
Well, a letter, I presume, is from your sister Julia.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, then, who is this young woman whom you brought here as Julia Simmons, and whom I was given to understand was your sister?
Well, you see, I knew I shouldn't have done it, but it was more of a joke than anything else. If you'll just let me explain...
I am waiting for you to explain. Who is she?
I met her at a cocktail party. We got talking, and I happened to say that I was coming along here to stay with you, and it seemed rather a good wheeze. So I brought her along.
And what about the real Julia? What happened to her?
Well, you see, she'd set her heart on going on the stage, but Mother was all against it. And then not long after we arrived in England, she got the chance to join a repertory company that was just setting up in Perth, and she was determined to give it a try. I agreed to keep Mother calm by telling her that Julia was here, learning to be a dispenser like a good little girl.
Well, you still haven't told me who this other young woman is.
I think it would be best if she explained that to you herself.
What's going on? What's happened?
The balloon's gone up.
Oh, I see. Well, that's that. I suppose you're very angry, Letty. I should be if I were you.
Who are you?
There's no point in trying to conceal it from you any longer. I'm half of the Pip and Emma combination.
You are Emma?
Emma Jocelyn Stamfordis, to be exact. My father and mother split up about 3 months after Pip and I were born, and they split us up too. I was father's part of the loot. Not that I ever saw very much of him. I had various spells of being educated in frightful convents when father hadn't any money, or when he was preparing to engage in some particularly nefarious business deal. He used to pay my first term fees with every sign of affluence, and then depart and leave me on the nuns' hands for a year or two. When the war came, we were separated completely.
And what about Pip? Where is he now?
I've no idea. I don't even know if he's alive.
So what happened to you, Emma?
Oh, I had quite an adventurous time. I was with the French Resistance for a while. Quite exciting.
You never told me that.
Anyway, to cut a long story short, I came to England. I knew that Mother's brother, with whom she'd had some kind of frightful row, had died a very rich man, and I looked up his will to see if there was anything for me. There wasn't. Not directly, anyhow. Mrs. Girdler was dying by inches, and there didn't seem much hope for me there. Frankly, Letty, I decided that you were my best bet. You were going to come into one hell of a lot of money, and from all I could find out, you didn't have anyone very much to spend it on. I thought you might perhaps take pity on a poor orphan girl and make her a small allowance.
And then you ran into me.
It just seemed an astonishing piece of good luck. I went bull-headed for Patrick, and he fell for me in the most gratifying way. And since the real Julia had swanned off to Perth to become the next Sarah Bernhardt, I thought I'd take her place for a bit.
And Patrick approved of you continuing to tell a tissue of lies to the police?
Well,
I was in a bit of a spot, wasn't I? I've got a very good motive for wanting to put you out of the way. You can't expect me to hold up my hand and say, "Here I am, I'm next in line for the loot."
But you must have known you couldn't keep this up indefinitely.
I didn't anticipate that Julia would have a flaming row with her producer and flounce out. And I thought you would send her a cable telling her to keep away. What an idiot.
Yes, it was pretty stupid.
See who that is, will you, Philippa? Mitzi's probably locked herself in her bedroom.
Yes, of course, Letty.
And you say you have no idea where Pip is?
Not the foggiest.
I think you're lying, but we'll let that pass. Tell me something. When you were in the French Resistance, did you learn how to shoot a gun?
Oh, yes. I'm a first-class shot. I didn't fire at you, Letty, but I can tell you one thing. If I had done so, I wouldn't have missed.
It's Inspector Craddock. There's been another murder.
Miss Murgatroyd is dead. She was strangled not more than an hour ago. Where have you been all day, Miss Simmons?
In Milchester. I've just got in.
And you, Mr. Simmons?
Yes.
And did you both come back together?
Yes. Yes, we did.
No, it's no good, Patrick. That's the kind of thing that will be found out at once. The bus people know us too well. I came back earlier, on the one that gets in at 4 o'clock.
And what did you do then?
I went for a walk.
In the direction of Boulders?
No. I went across the fields.
Even though it was raining heavily?
Little Paddox? Who? Oh, Mrs. Harmon. No. No, she hasn't. Well, I've really no idea. Oh, yes, he's here. It's Mrs. Harmon, Inspector.
Oh.
Miss Marple hasn't come back to the vicarage and she's rather worried.
What? Mrs. Harmon, this is Inspector Craddock.
Aunt Jane's out somewhere, but I don't know where she's got to. And they say that Miss Murgatroyd has been killed. Is that true?
I'm afraid it is, yes. Miss Marple went back with Miss Hinchliffe to Boulders after the body had been found.
Oh, so that's where she is?
No, she left there about half an hour ago.
But it's only 10 minutes' walk. Where can she be?
Perhaps she called in on one of your neighbours.
I've rung them, all of them. I've tried everywhere she might have gone. No one's seen her. I'm frightened, Inspector. I'm certain something must have happened.
When you saw Aunt Jane with Miss Hinchliffe at Boulder's after the murder, did she say she was coming back here to the vicarage?
No, she didn't. Oh. But I did have other things on my mind at the time. As far as I can remember, she was standing at the gate talking to my sergeant.
There's something you should see, I think, Inspector. Miss Marple had been writing some note on a piece of paper. I've got it here. Hmm. It might give some clue as to where she's gone.
Let's have a look. Lamp. Violets. Where is the bottle of aspirin? I can't read the next one.
The light would have been very bad. It's Delicious Death. It's a chocolate cake that Mitzi makes.
Yes, I know.
Sad affliction bravely born. That rings some kind of bell.
Pearls. Does she mean Miss Blacklock's pearls, I wonder? Now, there are two more words on the list. Letty and Ben. I've no idea what she meant by that.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes, of course.
The vicarage? Yes, he's here. It's your sergeant, Inspector.
I'm sorry that I can't just pack up my bag and go, Letty, but I don't imagine that the police would allow it. To tell you the truth, I don't know why Inspector Craddock hasn't been round here with the handcuffs for me already.
Still looking for the old lady, I expect. Miss Marple.
Do you think she could have been murdered too?
But why? What could she know? Unless Miss Murgatroyd told her something before she was murdered.
Murder, murder, murder. Can't you all talk about anything else? I'm frightened, don't you understand? I wasn't before. I thought I could take care of myself. But what can you do against a murderer who's waiting, watching and biding his time? Oh, God.
Don't worry, Aunt Letty. I'll look after you.
You? After you've brought into this house a woman who has the most reason to wish me dead.
I am come to say I am not going to cook the dinner. I go to my room and I lock myself in. I stay there until it is daylight. I am afraid. People are being killed all the time. That stupid Miss Murgatroyd. Who would wish to kill her? Only a maniac. And a maniac does not care who he kills. So now, I go to my room and I lock the door and I put the chest of drawers against it. Good night, Miss Blacklock. Perhaps in the morning you will not be alive. So in case that is so, I say goodbye.
It looks as if I'd better see to dinner. Rather convenient in a way. Less embarrassing for you all if you don't have me sitting round the table with you. And since Patrick has designated himself your official protector, Letty, he'd better taste every dish first.
I'll come and give you a hand.
No, thank you, Philippa. This isn't the time for girlish confidences.
I'll take it.
Little Paddox. She's pretty worn out at the moment. Well, can't it wait until morning?
Okay, if you must. It's that policeman. He insists on speaking to you.
Yes, Inspector, what is it?
I shall be with you in about 10 minutes' time, Miss Blacklock, and I shall be bringing Colonel and Mrs. Easterbrook with me.
Is that necessary, Inspector? I really can't cope with people here tonight.
I'm sorry, Miss Blacklock, but it has to be tonight. It is extremely urgent.
Oh, very well. Have you found Miss Marple?
No. I'm afraid there's no sign of her.
What have you been doing in my nice kitchen? Look at this pan. Only for omelettes I use it. And what have you been doing with it?
Well, somebody had to cook the dinner after you chickened out. I've been frying onions.
Onions? Then it is ruined. It will have to be washed. And never, never, ever do I wash my omelette pan. And this saucepan? This is my milk saucepan, and you have used it for some filthy sauce.
Well, how do I know what pans you use for what? I thought you were safely locked up in your room. Oh, go away and let me get on with the washing up.
No! Get out! Get out! I will not let you use my kitchen. And I shall not go to the door.
Suit yourself. I expect that will be the inspector with the Easterbrooks.
There's nothing like a good fire after a dreary, cold, rainy day. Cheers you up a bit.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
There doesn't seem to be any sign of that poor old lady. Bunch is going simply frantic with worry. She can't think of where she could have gone to. Well, she didn't come to us. I've not seen her today, and I should know, since I've scarcely left the house.
I don't want to keep you all any longer than is absolutely necessary, so we'd better begin. As you all know, Miss Murgatroyd was murdered this afternoon, and we have reason to believe that her killer was a woman. I'm going to ask certain ladies to account for where they were at the time of the murder. I've already had an account of her movements from a young lady who's been calling herself Julia Simmons, and I'm going to ask her to repeat her statement. Miss Stamfordis, I must caution you. You need not answer if you think what you say may incriminate you, and anything you do say will be taken down by the constable here and may be used in evidence against you.
Yes, well, I suppose you have to say that. I repeat that between 4 and 4:30 this afternoon, I was walking along the field leading down to the brook by Compton Farm. I did not meet anyone, and I did not go anywhere near Boulders.
Mrs. Easterbrook?
Are you cautioning all the ladies, Inspector?
No, Colonel. At this stage, I have no reason to believe that any other statements may be incriminating. But, of course, should your wife wish to have a solicitor present?
I'm sure that won't be necessary, will it, my dear?
Oh, no. No, I'm sure it won't.
So, if you could tell us your movements, Mrs. Easterbrook.
I was sitting with my husband in his study. We were listening to the wireless together. Weren't we, Archie?
Look, I'm afraid you don't understand these things, my dear. You see, Inspector, you've rather sprung this business on us, and my wife has been terribly upset about all these murders, as you can imagine.
Were you upset about the disappearance of your husband's pistol, Mrs. Easterbrook?
I don't know what you're talking about.
It is true, though, that you have a pistol, Colonel.
Yes, I do. It's just a kind of souvenir.
Why didn't you report that it was missing?
Well, you see, I never actually took out a license for it. I mean, after a war, you forget about these peacetime regulations. Didn't want to go looking for trouble.
Did you take it, Mrs. Easterbrook?
No, of course I didn't. I wouldn't even know how to fire it, would I, Archie?
So where were you this afternoon, Mrs. Easterbrook?
I was listening to the wireless.
And where were you, Colonel?
I was over at Croft End having a look at some chicken netting.
And were you listening to the wireless all afternoon, Mrs. Easterbrook?
Well, no. I went out for a walk at about 3:30, just a little walk, not far. I thought it was going to rain.
Thank you, Mrs. Easterbrook.
Well, aren't you going to ask the others where they were?
All in good time. But it won't be necessary to question everyone. You see, before she died, Miss Murgatroyd made a certain statement. On the night of the hold-up, someone was absent from this room. Someone who was supposed to have been in it all the time.
That is what you think. Why do you not ask Mitzi to come here with the others, Mr. Policeman? Because I am only Mitzi. Let her stay in the kitchen where she belongs. But I tell you, I can see things as well as anyone else. And better, too. I see something on the night of the murder, something I do not quite believe, so I hold my tongue until now. I tell myself I will wait. But now I am afraid. I do not want to be murdered, so I will tell you what I know.
All right then, Mitzi, what do you know?
I tell you. I am already in the dining room when I hear the gun go off. I look through the keyhole. The hall, it is black. But the gun goes off again, and as the torch falls, it swings round, and I see her. I see her close to him with the gun in her hand. I see Miss Blacklock.
Mitzi, don't be so ridiculous.
And now I go back to my kitchen.
Well, it's impossible. Mitzi couldn't have seen Aunt Letty.
And why not? Because it wasn't Miss Blacklock who was standing there with the gun. It was you.
Don't be stupid.
You took Colonel Easterbrook's revolver. You fixed up the business with Rudy's shirts. Everyone thought it was one of your jokes, and so it was. When the light went out, you slipped out through that door, which you had carefully oiled. You shot at Miss Blacklock, and you killed Rudy's shirts.
But what earthly motive had I got? Tell me that.
Because you are Pip, Mr. Simmons. You'd worked it all out very carefully with Miss Stamfordis, a carefully calculated double bluff.
You're out of your mind! How could I possibly be Pip?
You couldn't, Patrick. You're not Pip. I am.
You, Mrs. Ames?
Yes. Everyone seems to have assumed that Pip was a boy. Oh, you, of course, knew that your twin was another girl. I don't know why you didn't say so this afternoon.
Family solidarity. I had no idea that you were Pip until that moment.
I had the same idea that you did. After I lost my husband and the war was over, I had to find some way to support Harry and me. I found out where Miss Blacklock lived and I took a job at Deus Hall nearby. I hoped that Miss Blacklock, a woman with no relations, might be willing to help with Harry's education. And then the hold-up happened and I began to get frightened.
Oh, that's not the way to do the washing up, Mitzi. You can't do it in 2 inches of water. You need to turn the taps on. Fill the sink right up. What a liar you are, Mitzi.
You're not annoyed at what I say, Miss Blacklock?
I've got used to your lies by now, Mitzi.
I'll go to the inspector and tell him that I made it all up.
He knows that already. Only I know you're telling the truth for once.
No!
Lottie! Don't do it!
Oh!
Lottie, you mustn't kill her!
Oh, Dora! Forgive me! I had to do it!
Let the girl go, Miss Blacklock. You can come out of the cupboard now, Miss Marple.
Thank you.
Oh!
Sir Henry has always said I have a talent for mimicry.
Letitia Blacklock, I must warn you that
anything... No, Inspector, not Letitia. This isn't Letty. This is Lottie. This is Charlotte Blacklock.
So you know all about it?
Yes, I know all about it.
Oh, you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have made Dora's voice come. I love Dora. And ever since she died, I've been so alone.
I want to hear all about it. How did you find out, Aunt Jane?
I only helped a little here and there. Dermot did all the rail work.
Well, then, tell it together.
You could always take it in turns. Only let Aunt Jane go first, because I like the way her mind works.
I'll do my best. The story really began, you see, when a pretty, light-hearted, affectionate girl called Charlotte Blacklock developed an enlargement of the thyroid gland. A goiter is the common expression.
I know, an aunt of mine had one.
It ruined her life. Because she was a very sensitive girl who always put great value on her personal appearance. The obvious solution was for her to have an operation, but her father, a doctor, was very narrow-minded and very stubborn and wouldn't hear of it.
And what about her sister, the one who really was Letitia?
She was working as Randall Girdler's assistant. By then she'd become completely indispensable to him.
But at the same time she was devoted to Charlotte. She wrote her long accounts of what was happening to try and keep her sister in touch with life, and when old Dr. Blacklock died, she threw up her work with Girdler and took Charlotte off to Switzerland to have an operation to remove the goiter. It was a complete success, leaving only a thin scar.
Which is why she wore that pearl choker all the time.
Yes, one couldn't help noticing it.
One of the orderlies who worked at the clinic in Bern where she had the operation was a certain Rudy Schertz. I don't think that the Blacklock sisters interested him much, but he certainly noticed them. And he remembered.
And then the war broke out, and the sisters had to stay on in Bern, where they worked for the Red Cross. By then, Randall Girdler was dead, and they knew all about the enormous fortune that would eventually come to Letitia. Of course, she planned to share it with her sister. And I think the prospect of being rich probably meant more to Charlotte.
So what went wrong?
Letitia, strong, healthy Letitia, got the flu, which turned to pneumonia, and within a week she was dead.
And Charlotte realised that her only chance of holding on to the fortune was to become Letitia.
I don't think she really felt that what she was doing was wrong. She came to England and bought a house in a part of the country where no one knew about the Blacklock sisters. She settled down at Little Paddocks, and for a time everything went splendidly. Until she made her first mistake.
Dora Bunner.
Yes. Letty received a letter from an old school friend who'd fallen on hard times, and being a kind-hearted and naturally affectionate person, she hurried to the rescue. I think that she was, in spite of everything, lonely.
But Dora must have written to her as Letitia. She must have had a bit of a shock when she discovered that Letitia was actually Charlotte.
Oh, yes, she would have been surprised. But I think that once Charlotte told her what she had done, Dora would have approved wholeheartedly. So Dora came to Little Paddocks, and it was not long before Charlotte began to realise that she had made a mistake. She was in a constant state of apprehension that Dora would reveal her secret. In her confused, muddle-headed way, Dora was always calling her Lottie instead of Letty.
Oh, yes, so she did. I noticed that.
So did I. But Dora being Dora, I never gave it a second thought.
Yes, that could be passed off easily enough. But Dora made other references to the past which could not be so easily explained away. However, the real blow to Charlotte's security came when she was recognised and spoken to by Rudy Schertz at the Royal Spa Hotel, where he was working as a receptionist.
He applied to her for money. He needed to cover a whole series of petty frauds at the hotel. He didn't realise at the time that he was in a position to blackmail her. But of course, she saw the potential threat straight away. He was in a position to blow her whole world apart, to reveal that she wasn't Letitia Blacklock, the heiress to the Girdler millions, but her sister Charlotte. She had to get rid of him.
She told Rudy Schertz that she wanted him to take part in a fake hold-up at a party she was giving in her house. It was all to be a tremendous joke, of course, and she would pay him well for it. She gave him the advertisement to put in the Chipping Cleghorn Gazette and arranged for him to come to Little Paddocks so that he would know his way around the house and showed him where he could wait until she let him in.
So that's why she was so nervous when the day came. Dora said she was frightened, but she wasn't frightened about the murder advertisement. She was worried that the plan might go wrong.
Did she steal the gun from the Colonel's drawer then?
Oh, yes. She would have known all about it from the cleaning lady, Mrs. Bott. And taking it would not have been very difficult. Like everyone else in the village, the Easterbrooks never bothered to lock their doors. So at the time announced, everyone called in at Little Paddocks, eager to see what was going to happen. She let Rudy Schertz into the house and went to join the others in the drawing room. And as the clock chimed 6:30, she went to stand by the shepherdess lamp with a vase of violets in her hand.
Which is what Dora Bunner said when I first spoke to her. And when Miss Blacklock contradicted her and said she was holding a box of cigarettes, I didn't even notice the significance of it.
She had frayed the cord of the lamp until the wires were nearly bare. She spilt the water from the vase onto the flex, switched on the lamp, the wires fused, and all the lights went out.
Just like this afternoon at the vicarage. That's what put you onto it.
Well, after it was all over, she switched the shepherdess lamp for the shepherd, and no one except Dora was any the wiser.
The shepherdess is up in the attic. I noticed it when I was there.
And when the wires fused, there was a burn mark made on the table.
And Dora noticed that as well.
With the lights out, the room was in total darkness.
That was why no fire had been lit. Colonel Easterbrook said that was the first thing he noticed when he came into the room.
And while everyone was blundering about in the dark, Charlotte slipped out through the door, which everyone thought was never used, and came up behind Rudy Schatz with the gun in her hand. When the light from his torch reached the spot where she was supposed to be standing, she fired twice, very rapidly.
He swung round, and she held the gun close to his body and shot him. Then she slipped back quietly into the drawing room. She nicked her ear. I don't know how.
Oh, nail scissors, I expect. Hmm? It would only need a little snip to make quite a lot of blood.
Well, it all worked perfectly. It certainly took me in.
But now, there was the problem of Dora Bunner. She knew about the change of lamps and the burn on the table, and she would keep rambling on about the past. When she talked to me in the cafe that morning about sad affliction bravely borne, I began to realise that she wasn't talking about Letty at all, but Charlotte.
And so poor old Dora had to go.
But what about Miss Murgatroyd? Why did she need to kill her?
She was outside the window at Boulder's when she saw Hinchliff and Miss Murgatroyd trying to reconstruct the scene of the murder. Miss Murgatroyd was remembering the way Rudy Schertz had shone his torch round the room, and she suddenly realised that when the light had reached the spot where Miss Blacklock was supposed to be standing, she hadn't been there. That was what she shouted out after Miss Hinchliffe as she drove the car off to the station. She wasn't there.
And so Murgatroyd had to go too.
Drat. Excuse me. The vicarage? Yes, yes, he's here. It's for you, Inspector.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Harmon. Craddock here?
So, it was you who put Mitzi up to the business of bursting in and accusing Miss Blacklock, was it, Miss Marple?
Well, yes, it was. But I had to work on her a little, of course. I rehearsed her until she was word perfect.
What did you expect to happen, Aunt Jane?
One of two things. Either Miss Blacklock would offer Mitzi money to hold her tongue, which I would have overheard, or she would try to kill her.
But she could never have hoped to get away with that.
Oh, my dear, she was past reasoning. She was as desperate as a cornered rat. Think of what had already happened that day. She'd taken a tremendous risk strangling Miss Murgatroyd in her garden. No time to make a plan, just crude murder.
But weren't you taking one hell of a risk? Mitzi might have been killed.
Inspector Craddock knew just what was going on. He was waiting for a cue from the kitchen. You see, I knew that my little impersonation of Dora would break Lottie Blacklock completely.
Mrs. Hames?
Yes, Inspector?
Could I have a word with you? In private, if I may.
Of course.
Could we use your husband's study, Mrs. Harmon?
Of course.
In a way, I find it difficult not to feel rather sorry for Charlotte Blacklock. She'd killed the only real friend she had left to her in the world. After that, I doubt whether anything really mattered very much.
I'm afraid I have some bad news for you, Mrs. Hames. It's about your husband.
My husband? What about him?
He died in Milchester General Hospital this evening. He'd been run down by a lorry. There were no papers on him. No identification of any kind. But there was a scrap of paper in his pocket which they overlooked at first, with the number of little paddocks written on it. And there was a photograph, which I suspect is of you, Mrs. Hames. They'd like you to go along and identify the body. I'll take you there when you're ready.
You say he was killed by a lorry?
Yes, Mrs. Hames. But you'll be able to tell your son that his father died a hero's death. He gave his life to save a child that had rushed out into the road. He snatched it from under the lorry's wheels, but he couldn't save himself. I'm very sorry, Mrs. Hames. But at least your boy can be proud to bear his father's name.
I have come to say the goodbyes, Mr. Simmons, to take my farewell of you.
And where are you going to go, Missy?
I have found a post in Southampton. Not just cooking and answering the door. And if they tell me, Mitzi, you have first to go and see the police, you must register as an alien, I will say to them, yes, I will register. The police, they know me very well. I assist the police. Without me, they would never have made the arrest of a very dangerous criminal. A woman who killed many, many times.
I'm sure they'll be most impressed, Mitzi.
When that old lady came to see me in my kitchen, she said to me, Mitzi, if you had stayed in your own country, you would have been a heroine in the resistance. You are brave, and you are not afraid of taking the risks, and you are clever. You can act a part.
You certainly gave a performance none of us will ever forget.
And when it was all over, they say to me, Mitzi, you are so brave. We could never have done it without you.
And they were quite right.
And now, Mr. Simmons, I give you a little goodbye present.
Oh, really, Mitzi?
It is the recipe for delicious death. Here, take it.
Oh, thank you very much.
But you must never show it to that Julia, or whatever her name is. She ruined my omelette pan by cooking the onions in it. She does not deserve to know how to make delicious death.
It feels more like spring than autumn. What a wonderful day. We shall miss you, you know, Aunt Jane.
And I shall miss you, Bunch.
It's a shame we haven't really had any time to ourselves. Too many murders for that. But at least you can get back to the peace and quiet of St. Mary Mead.
Peace and quiet in St. Mary Mead? Oh, no. After all, we have had a murder in the vicarage and a body in Colonel Bantry's library. If I know anything about crime at all, I know it from St. Mary Mead. A natural genius cultivated in suitable soil, Sir Henry Clithering once called me. Oh, no, Bunch. Whatever may be awaiting me in St. Mary Mead, it certainly won't be peace and quiet. And what would I want with peace and quiet anyway?
In Agatha Christie's A Murder is Announced, Miss Marple was played by June Whitfield. Detective Inspector Craddock, Ian Lavender. Sir Henry Clithering, Graham Crowden. Letty Blacklock, Sarah Lawson. Dora Bunner, Judy Cornwell. Colonel Easterbrook, Jack Headley. Laura Easterbrook, Joanna McCullum. Bunch Harmon, Molly Gaysford. The Reverend Julian Harmon, Ioan Meredith. Miss Hinchliffe, Elizabeth Bell. Miss Murgatroyd, Alice Arnold. Patrick Simmons, Jamie Glover. Julia Simmons, Angela Sims. Philippa Hames, Sarah Rice. Mitzi, Jenny Funnell. Mrs. Girdler, Tessa Worsley. A Murder is Announced was dramatized by Michael Bakewell. It was directed by Enid Williams for BBC Radio 4 and is published in the UK by BBC Worldwide.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.